This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We've got stuff to figure out, and that's why Jeff Sullivan is here. Fangraphs senior editor on Twitter at @based_ball, and joining us on the Bernstein and McKnight show as he does during baseball season. Hello, Jeff.
Hey, it's going to be weird. We only have like another, what, one of these? Two of these? I don't know how long the season goes. We're almost out of time.
Yeah, but it'll be longer for Yasmani Grandal. At least it'll feel longer for him. That's been a real tough go. So, Jeff, the Cubs hired a new hitting coach, Anthony Iaposi. I'm getting used to saying it myself and stumbling a few times through it. What do you believe about hitting coaches in general and how important it is to have somebody who speaks the language versus someone who's a technical fixer? Any specifics?
So what? First of all, from the outside, you know, you always hope you have a leaderboard. You can find the best players in the game. There's no way to really identify the best coaches in the game. We just don't know how to do it. There's way too many variables. But what I think is an easy point to miss is if you look at any article that's about Chili Davis on his way out or Anthony Iaposi on his way in, and you'll see quotes. I was just reading about Davis a few minutes ago, reading quotes about how, you know, he thinks that he has the right message, but he failed to deliver it. He failed to get the Cubs players to listen, or you could say the Cubs players failed to listen to him. Doesn't really matter. The point was that there, at least according to Davis, and I think according to the Cubs front office as well, there was a barrier. The messages were not conveyed and understood as the Cubs would have preferred. And I think what you see, think of how many swing change guys there are again around the game. Think of JD Martinez and his swing coach is now, I think, like an assistant hitting coach with the Diamondbacks or something like that. You've got these independent swing doctors, and this applies to pitching coaches as well. There are coaches who can communicate very, very well with individual players. Maybe they see eye to eye with different personality types and they just kind of mesh well. But there's a difference between maybe connecting with one or two guys and connecting with an entire clubhouse where you have people who speak a lot of different languages, literally and figuratively. And it seems like probably in this case, a failing of Chili Davis is that he just wasn't able to adapt his message. And, you know, he's had success before as a hitting coach, or at least he's been around when his teams were successful at the plate. But it seems like the problem here is just that if he is confident in his message, he was not able to find a way to communicate it to all the different corners of the Cubs clubhouse. And the hope, I guess, is that Anthony Iaposi would be able to, be more familiar with the various types of baseball people, better able to communicate with them. I don't know if that's true, but in a situation like this, you kind of have to take the team at its word because they're the people who are literally there, and I'm just a guy in Portland, Oregon.
Portland's a nice place to be. So as we're looking around, we kind of, over the last 3 or 4 years, have started to see or began to see the swing change guys, right? Whether it's Mitch Haniger early on or whether it's JD Martinez. Daniel Murphy, one of those guys. David Bodie, one of those guys. You start to see some of this stuff happen. Are we at a point where we're starting to see the adjustment to the adjustment? What does Ian Happ have to do to hit a high fastball? How does Christian Yelich adapt to the high fastball at this point?
So, yeah, Yelich is an interesting case. You can talk to Yelich. I think Christian Yelich is probably done having launch angle conversations, maybe for the rest of his life. I think he's probably just so tired of hearing about it, although at least for him, he's annoyed with the conversation after a good season. Think of poor Eric Hosmer and saying, anyway, that's a different point. It's hard. You look league-wide. There are so many anecdotal cases of guys who have made swing changes to try to lift the ball in the air, you know, all this stuff, try to counteract the shift, hit more home runs, etc. So many anecdotal changes, and then you look at the overall league numbers, and the ground ball rate has declined very slightly. The average launch angle has increased very slightly, but there's nothing real dramatic in there. And So what I think we were seeing even a few years ago is that you were seeing some more high spin, high four seam fastballs targeted to the fly ball hitters. And you'll see that now. I mean, look, I don't know. An example right now would be Jock Peterson or Cody Bellinger. Cody Bellinger, watch Cody Bellinger swing.
He's down on his back leg. I mean, he goes down to one knee more often than not.
Yeah. That's incredible. And also, whenever he pulls, he's tricked me a few times. Whenever he pulls a fly ball, you just assume it's in the upper deck. But he's just, I don't know, he's happened in the World Series last year and happened a few days ago. He just hit the fly ball out of the track. Anyway, you look at a guy like Cody Bellinger, and there's just, he, because of his swing, he's just not real able to get on top of that high pitch. That's not true of everyone. You look at someone like Giancarlo Stanton or George Springer or Nelson Cruz, these guys hit the ball really hard, but they have kind of flatter, more level swings. And this is just kind of the way that it goes in the game, where you have players who are making adjustments, making themselves better. I think, you know, take a guy like Mitch Haniger. He certainly is a far better player now than he was a few years ago after making changes to his swing, but that doesn't mean that he doesn't have a vulnerability. Maybe when he was a worse player, he was better just at getting on top of the high fastball, but now he's more likely to get exposed up there, and that's just part of it. Everybody short of Mike Trout or Miguel Cabrera 5 years ago has a weakness somewhere, and if you're a hitter, you're just trying to make sure that you can punish mistakes, and that's where launch angle guys, like the new launch angle guys, that's where they really thrive, because if pitchers are able to execute their pitches all the time, they're going to get almost everyone out.
Have you seen the Bill James tweets? I've been sort of following the conversation from afar, and Len Casper was tweeting about it. Bill James was tweeting about the idea of baseball devaluing the starting pitcher is, and I'm trying to walk through this because a lot of this is just old man yells at cloud, but part of it is baseball exists to entertain. Baseball is less entertaining when starting pitching means less. Therefore, baseball must find a way to retrofit the meaning of starting pitching to keep old people entertained. Am I getting this right?
I think you're delivering the message. Maybe you said old people a few too many times in that explanation. I was talking to I podcast co-host and staff writer for The Ringer, Ben Lindberg. I was talking to him about this last week. He wrote an article at The Ringer about the decline of the starting pitcher. I wrote an article at Fangraphs about the decline of the starting pitcher. Mine sort of piggybacked off of his, and there's clearly been a decline in the a diminishing role for the starting pitcher. You don't have to take it as extreme as the Tampa Bay Rays, but even elsewhere, starters just aren't working as deep. We know this. So there's been a long-term decline in how many innings they're thrown. Now, there are two ways to look at this. One, this is happening because starters get tired, they get worse, and then you bring in these relievers. Every bullpen has six guys who throw 98 with a wipeout slider. They're just everywhere. And so, of course, it works to a team's benefit to go to the bullpen sooner and not to overexpose the starter. We don't need to walk through all the explanation. It's just everybody knows it by now. But there is a compelling, I think, point to be made about the way Ben Lindberg laid it out. As he thinks of the starting pitchers, or at least he's always thought of the starting pitchers, as sort of the protagonists of the baseball game, and there's a story around them. And if you have a hitter who drives up his pitch count, then that's something that should matter. Or maybe you have a manager who's I think the 15-year anniversary of the Grady Little game, or maybe it's a day late after that. You'd think of the managing decisions in the seventh and eighth that used to be made that don't really have to be made now, unless the pitcher is, I don't know, throwing a no-hitter and he's got 108 pitches under his belt. So that's something that is missing. And honestly, I kind of miss it too. The question, so I pulled the audience at Fangraphs. I pulled them last week. I was curious how people feel about the decline of the starting pitcher, just from an entertainment perspective. And of the people who expressed something other than a neutral opinion, it was actually a 3-to-1 ratio that people expressed a negative opinion on the decline of the starting pitcher. And these are nerds. These are baseball nerds. Yeah. Like, these are people you'd think would be at the vanguard of appreciating everything that's new and novel and innovative. And I guess the real question is going to be, is this just a blip? Are we just not used to it yet? Think of your favorite website you go to. If they change their template, then like for the next week, you'd just be furious at the website because you'd hate it. You want what you're used to, and then you kind of get used to it. Maybe you see the benefits and you adapt and move on from there. So it'll be interesting to kind of rerun these polls every year to see if the attitudes shift. But right now, I think that people do miss the starting pitcher working deep, and I do too. It's not a deal breaker, but there is something lacking for sure.
There is a pretty vocal segment of coaches/analysts, some of them at Driveline, who maintain that teams would develop starters if only they knew what the hell they were doing. Is that a fair assessment of why you don't have as many starters in this game right now, that it might just be easier to develop flamethrowers for 25 pitches apiece?
Well, it is. I guess I shouldn't say it's not easy to develop a relief pitcher, because it's not easy to find someone who can throw 100 miles per hour and has a secondary pitch. There's, you know, there is still a dearth of these guys relative to how many teams want these guys, but it is far easier to develop a starting pitcher or a relief pitcher. And when you have a starter, it generally requires more patience. You need to have faith in a guy's durability. It's certainly, you could have a bad team in baseball and they could end up with 5 or 10 interesting rookie relievers, but they might have only one interesting rookie starter candidate. And then you have to think, well, how good is this guy going to be long-term? Because we can just constantly rotate through new relievers year after year after year after year. You're treating them as, you don't even see them as people anymore. You just think of them as just these slatter machines you bring up from Double A. So there is a sort of there's an appeal in the ease with which you can find a reliever. You can have a starting pitcher prospect in high A at the start of the season. He could be in the majors throwing the eighth inning by August or September if you just put him in a smaller role, tell him lean fastball, lean slider, and then just go for it. And it requires so much more patience to work with that guy as a starter. And you throw in how little teams still know about what makes a pitcher durable, and I can see how it's swinging in that direction. I think of a case like Edwin Diaz with the Mariners a few years ago. When he was still very young, he was down in the minors. And the Mariners have had a bad farm system for a long time, but he was their best starting pitcher prospect at the time, and the Mariners said, you know what, we're going to convert him to relief. And he was in the Major League bullpen that summer. It took very little time at all, and it's hard to say that they made the wrong call, but there was a lot of consternation at the time that, well, why not work with the guy? Why not see if he can develop a changeup in the next 2 or 3 years, for God's sake? He's got the time. But the team didn't do it. It's hard to blame them, because right now teams aren't being penalized that much for not developing many starting pitchers.
Hey, before we let you go, real quick, Jeff, have you remembered, is there anything that this Yasmani Grandal meltdown has in precedent for a position player to be this bad all over the place? I mean, there have been some, but on this stage, though, in the postseason, all of a sudden, we know there's like Byun Hyung Kim had some issues. Like, there have been some bad beats out there, or it was Brad Lidge. There's been some bad beats, but to have a position player seemingly lose the ability to play, I don't remember anything like this.
The name that keeps coming to my mind is just Matt Wieters from, what was it, last year's NLDS?
Oh, yeah.
Everything is a blur, but, I mean, Wieters was just
he was off.
A catastrophe. And, I mean, the Nationals brought him back anyway, but you could sort of see a career flash before his eyes at that point. I don't know if you remember, like, 10, 11 years ago, there was MattWietersFacts.com. And it was just like when Matt Wieters is a top prospect, he was supposed to be the next hot shot, the next perennial MVP. And, you know, Wieters had a fine first half of his career, but at this point, no one really thinks much of him anymore. I don't know. I always root for the players in these situations. I root for Clayton Kershaw and David Price to shed those playoff labels, and I hope that Yasmani Grandal has a great game four. But it is giving me a lot of Wieters flashbacks, and that's not a good thing. I mean, you watch the Cubs and Matt Wieters. There's a 4.5 hour game five, for God's sake.
Jeff Sullivan, thank you.
Absolutely.
We'll talk again next week. Jeff Sullivan.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.